Hi, and welcome to the Kubernetes podcast from Google. I'm Adam Glick.
And I'm Craig Box. Welcome to another week. This is a week that I've spent predominantly on vacation. And Adam, how's your time been spent?
My time has been spent catching up from all the things that we got through with Next and all the follow-up behind that, catching up with some customers, and most importantly, discovering a wonderful series on Netflix called Full Metal Alchemist. And I realize I'm coming to this decades late, but it is a fantastic series. I'm one season into it so far and totally engaging. If anyone out there loves anime and has not seen this, seriously, something to put into your queue.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have the kind of holidays that let you spend a lot of time watching television. My week has been mountains, marmots, and meetups here in Colorado. I presented what I believe to be the first meetup talk on Knative last week. And since then, I've been driving around Colorado with my partner, and we've had a fantastic time climbing mountains, driving up mountains, and sort of getting out and climbing the last 100 feet or so. It's not so much a mountain climbing thing, and enjoying a lot of wildlife. So if anyone of you follow me on Twitter, you'll see some pictures of some mountain things. I should put moose in there as well. That was a very important part. We didn't find moose early in the trip, so we had to go back to the park, and yesterday, indeed, we saw a good 7 or 8 of them.
Wow. So
fantastic time.
Cool. You want to get to the news?
Last October, Docker announced that they would be integrating Kubernetes into their desktop and enterprise products. Support for Kubernetes entered the Docker Edge channel in January and the enterprise platform in April. It has now graduated to the desktop distribution, which means any user running the stable version of Docker Desktop can develop locally on certified Kubernetes. Docker says that automatic upgrades are rolling out now.
Project Harbor, an open-source container registry, has joined the CNCF at the sandbox level. Harbor is a cloud-native registry that stores, signs, and scans content. It was originally created by VMware and extends Docker registry functionality, adding security, identity, and management functions. Harbor supports replication of images between registries and offers security features such as vulnerability analysis, role-based access control, and activity auditing.
A trifecta of news items from Microsoft. Azure Kubernetes Service is now available in the Southeast Asia Singapore region. Microsoft released an open-source metrics adapter for Azure, allowing you to horizontally scale based on things like Azure Service Bus queues. And CloudBees Core, formerly their Jenkins Enterprise, is now GA on AKS, joining GKE, Amazon EKS, and OpenShift as supported platforms.
Speaking of OpenShift, Red Hat this week announced Red Hat OpenShift Container Platform 3.10. The primary theme of this release is performance and brings commercial support to several features built by Red Hat in the Kubernetes upstream, such as device management for GPUs, the CPU manager, and support for huge pages. We can't wait to see what's on tap in OpenShift 3.11 for workgroups.
Hot on the heels of their $8 million financing round, Codefresh, provider of a continuous delivery platform for Kubernetes by the same name, have announced an enterprise version. Codefresh Enterprise can be run fully on-prem, as SaaS, or in a hybrid configuration with a local agent. The enterprise version offers features such as support for Windows containers, single sign-on authentication, and a layered permissions model for deployment pipelines.
Upside posted an interesting blog post this week about syncing their Kubernetes secrets with LastPass. In this case, they're using LastPass, a bit like a key management service, and accessing it from their various Kubernetes clusters. While maybe not as enterprise-focused as using a key management service or hardware security module as a way to store secrets, it is an interesting API-driven approach to using a common, broadly adopted consumer technology.
And finally, with the launch of Istio 1.0, Tetrate, a startup founded by former Google Istio product manager Varun Telwar, is starting to come out of stealth. A post by engineer Matt Turner talks about installing Istio on Amazon EKS. While specifically talking about nightly builds, Matt points out the important fact that EKS does not currently support webhook admission controllers required for automatically adding Istio sidecars to Kubernetes deployments. So at this point, people will have to use manual sidecar admission or create their own clusters with a tool like Kops, with a K.
And that's the news. Jasmine Yakshic is a technical program manager on the Istio project. Dan Cirilli is a product manager on Istio and works on the managed version of Istio for Google Cloud. Welcome to both of you.
Hey, Adam. Thank you very much. We are really excited to be here.
Hey, happy to be here.
Congratulations on the 1.0 launch. How would you describe Istio to someone who hasn't heard of it before?
So we all know all the different issues we have, monolithic applications and services. And off lately, the trend has been to move more and more closer to microservices, which solves a lot of problems. But what it does not do is when you have hundreds or thousands of microservices, it becomes extremely difficult to connect and manage and monitor and secure them. And this is where Istio comes in. You don't need complex libraries. You don't need complicated codes or a large team of developers to manage them for you. You get all of those things out of the box.
And I'd say you get those problems far before you're at hundreds or thousands of microservices. If you have 10 pods running in your Kubernetes cluster and they're communicating at all, you need to know what communication is happening. And what Istio does is gives you ways to understand the communication between your services, to control how it happens, and to secure it.
Is Istio for developers or for operators?
It is actually for both. And what it does, it provides abstraction between what a developer does and what an operator does. And what I mean by that is if you're a developer, you can build new services, you can redeploy existing services, and you don't have to worry about operator controls. And similarly, if you're an operator, you can configure, you can make changes, and you don't have to write or change existing code. So that level of abstraction is what Istio calls service mesh. And Google had perfected this way before we came up with Istio, and that's why we wanted to open source it.
Dan, do you remember a couple of years ago, we had a customer roundtable day in Toronto that I arranged, and a bunch of Google PMs came. We had a chat about this kind of thing.
I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Does that mean I'm a co-founder of Istio?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, if you haven't gotten your trophy yet, the co-founder's trophy.
Oh, I didn't know they were issuing those.
Have you been at your cube? It's probably at your cube.
I'll have to go back and check my cube. But it's been a good couple of years now, obviously. I was looking back at the slides we showed that day, and I was surprised, actually, at how much the service graph stuff we've just announced for Istio. I'm like, we've obviously been telegraphing that for quite some time.
The thing that I remember from that day, actually, very clearly, is people talking about wanting to make decisions on their Kubernetes clusters based on L7
yes.
metrics, right? Yep. I don't want to scale based on CPU consumption. I don't want to scale based on my RAM consumption.
When you're saying L7, you mean like HTTP?
Yeah, things that you only know when you understand the protocol. For example, how many requests are happening. People want to scale based on things like how many requests per second am I serving right now? Or what are my latencies looking like right now? Those are the top two things that people want to scale on. And one of the things that Istio does is collects metric like that for all of your services so that you can plumb those back into Kubernetes and scale with them.
How did we go from the discussions we had on that day to having an open source product a few months later?
We were thinking about it already, and that was really a time of discovery for us as we were going out and we hadn't chosen a name, we hadn't figured out what the architecture would be, but we were just kind of listening to the problems that people were having. And what we realized is that the things that Jasmine talked about, those issues that people have with communication, how you understand what's happening in an application, how you scale it appropriately, how you do a canary rollout. Everyone who was adopting Kubernetes was having those exact problems. And in doing those and going out and going to meetups and hearing what's hard, Kubernetes is solving a lot of problems for you. It's making it easy to deploy frequently. That's great. But now what's happening, as it turns out, it created a new set of problems. And so we had the same set of problems internally. We had solved it internally with a sidecar proxy that talked to a management plane, a control plane. And we said, hey, it sounds like the world needs that.
There's something in this.
Right. And so we started talking to some people in the industry. Turns out IBM had a project that was doing something very similar.
Only for traffic routing, I understand, though, not for any of
the— Right. It wasn't doing the whole thing. Turns out that Lyft had just open sourced a really fantastic proxy. And we said, I think we can build something that's going to solve these problems for people.
Yeah, and when we realized the amount of overlap we had with Amalgamate, IBM decided to partner with us and shelve the product that they were working on. And like Dan pointed out, we decided to use Lyft's proxy and together build Istio.
Folks from Istio here on a Kubernetes podcast, and I often hear about Istio in a Kubernetes kind of scenario. Are they part of the same project? Why are they different?
That's a good question. I just got asked that. We considered whether or not Istio should be part of Kubernetes. And the reason it's not is that when we were on that kind of listening tour, we were going out and talking it with people about what we were thinking about building and what it would solve. The overwhelming response we got was, that's great, but I need it not just for Kubernetes. And when we were talking to people then, even people who were doing all their new deployment on Kubernetes, if it was a company that was older than, say, 4 or 5 years old, they were also doing non-Kubernetes. And when they talk about, hey, secure the traffic between my services or route traffic between my services or give me a picture of what's going on, they absolutely said this has to include not Kubernetes stuff. And so that's why, obviously, this pairs very well with Kubernetes, but that's why we said, okay, this will sit alongside Kubernetes.
in the context of Kubernetes, it's not the only service mesh that's available for people to use with Kubernetes. What makes this one different?
I think the big thing is that we've tried to get a lot of people in the industry behind this. We have worked very hard. IBM, as Jasmine said, has been there from the very beginning. Now VMware has joined, Cisco has joined with us, Red Hat has joined with us. And the big difference here, I think, is that we've got a lot of people saying, hey, this isn't my solution. This is our solution. And they're contributing. They're helping us make design decisions. I'm sure there will be lots of commercial implementations. I think that's a really positive thing. And I think that's what differentiates it from everything that comes from a single company out there.
And it's interesting, right? Because when we started back in 2016, it was a relatively small group of developers from IBM and Google mostly working on this. And we used to have one-hour meetings once a week where we would go through all the bugs and feature requests and triage them. And that was all the time we needed. But that all changed once we launched it to 0.1 back in May, because up until the point, we didn't have a community to speak of, mostly because we hadn't launched anything. But after May, there was a huge adoption across the board. And like Dan pointed out, now we have a thriving community, both with users and developers and partners. And we have hundreds of people who have been eager to communicate to this product. And we've been working all together very closely to make 1.0 happen.
So why 1.0 and why now?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that it's ready for production usage. And I'm not saying that because we've finally passed our tests and everything's fine. I'm saying that because people are using it in production today. You know, I was just in a conversation with them. They're using it on this, their first services. The weather company is running a large installation, 400,000 requests a second. We have a bunch of customers, over a dozen that we know of. Now, being open source, of course, we don't know most of the people who are using it, which is interesting. But we know of a bunch of companies that are in production using this today. AutoTrader in the UK has said that it has been instrumental in their move to the cloud. So the biggest thing is we know it's ready for production workloads. And we've also had a lot of people tell us, hey, we're not going to use that until it's 1.0. Right now, we've got some early adopters, people who are courageous, people who worked through some problems. I want to be honest. Of course, they found problems, right? There are a lot more people who won't use a piece of software until it's 1.0 or 1.1. And at this stage, we need to learn more. We need it to be out there. So we know that it's working. We know that it's working for a bunch of use cases, and we want to encourage adoption there.
Is it finished?
We have spent well over a year working on 1.0, and there are a lot of things that are coming out with this launch, right? So it's an example, new features. If you think about service-to-service incremental MTLS, that is a very powerful feature to be able to have MTLS traffic and HTTPS traffic and not have to worry about, you know, migrating it all overnight.
I have been waiting for that for some time.
Exactly. And there are a lot of other people, you know, who've been waiting for that as well. So that would be part of 1.0. We've also spent a lot of time hardening the existing features. And what I mean by that is a lot of features currently that are in alpha would be moving to beta, not all of them. I know that would be ideal, but it's going to happen iteratively. So we picked all the key features that the community really wanted and made sure that they're moving to beta. We also spent a lot of time on performance and scalability. So when we did the testing last time, we realized that the overhead for adding a sidecar is less than 1 millisecond now.
Okay.
Which is phenomenal compared to where we started. And if you think about scalability, you can actually increase it to 1,000 or even 1,500 QPS per CPU, and it handles them really, really well. We also improved documentation. We are improving the site. So there's a lot of effort that went into making this happen.
Now, is it done? Of course not. The fun thing is, of course, it's not done, right? We have a roadmap. We have features that we're in process. There are features that will still be in alpha that we're still developing. But what's exciting at this point is we don't know what we don't know. And we know of dozen-ish people using it in production. It's about to get a much broader adoption. And as soon as we do, we're going to learn a lot about how it's used. We're going to learn where it falls over. We're going to learn what features people really need to take it to the next step. So no, of course, it's not done.
Well, you've talked about the low overhead of installing Istio. Should everyone install Istio on their cluster?
I love that question. And the answer is yes. Istio needs to get to the point that everyone who's using Kubernetes considers it a no-brainer. They should view it as, of course, I'm going to turn it on. Unless you're running batch workloads completely, you're going to want to monitor the traffic on that. Istio has to become the easiest standard way to do that. So that is absolutely my goal, is that 90-something percent of the people who turn up a Kubernetes cluster decide to turn up Istio.
And I would also add to that and say, if you've been waiting on the sidelines, waiting for a time to use Istio, that is absolutely now.
That time is now.
Yes.
Yes.
And the place is here.
I love it.
Istio is also a component of the new Knative serverless ecosystem. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, Knative is the open source serverless implementation. We talked to them very early on, and there's been some pushback in the community, like, hey, should you take a dependency on Istio? Absolutely, there's been some pushback. Well, here's the deal. When you're running serverless functions, when you're running these functions, you need something to route traffic to them. And unless you're crazy, you need something to monitor what's going on there. And in all likelihood, you want something to secure them. And so the Knative team had a choice to make: release without those features and say, you can add those later if you want them, build all that themselves, or use Istio for that. And they chose the latter. As I said before, it's the Istio team's job to make adopting Istio easy and, in fact, transparent for a use case like that. And so that's our goal. Like, if it seems too complicated, then it's on the Istio team to make that easier. But yeah, so Knative requires Kubernetes, it requires Istio, and that may seem like an odd choice right now, but a year from now, I hope they look back and they say, well, of course.
So what was announced at Google Cloud Next?
There were a lot of cool announcements that happened at Next and that were related to Istio. I will start with 1.0. And obviously, like I said, this is something that we've all been working on for a really long time. And it has a ton of cool features. And it's something that all the customers and partners have been waiting in the sidelines for. So yeah, that's one big thing. We also have a managed Istio that is going to launch to alpha. And I don't know if any of you got a chance to, as an example, watch the breakout session that Stackdriver team had with Descartes Lab. And Tim did this really cool demo where he showed all the different services that he had as a way of service graph. And you could see the entire topology and understand the traffic that flows between the different services. You could click on every single service, understand the latency between them, and drill it all the way down to traces. And if you are an SRE, and to be able to go back and see what changed over a period of time is a very powerful thing. And that's only a very small piece of what is going to come as part of CSP.
And CSP is a cloud services platform. It is a bunch of projects that we've been working on that we're putting together. Istio and managed Istio is one of the big components there. But probably the main component of CSP is GKE on-prem. And what our goal is there is to allow you to adopt a single architecture, whether it's running in your own data centers or running in ours. Use a common control plane to control the deployment, to control the administration of those, as well as with Istio, the management of the traffic between those services and into all those services.
And if you're interested in learning more about CSP, you can listen to episode 13 with Aparna Sinha, where we talked in depth about Google's new cloud services platform.
My favorite episode so far.
Policy is exciting. Now that we've hit 1.0, is there anything we're looking to change about the governance of the Istio project?
Well, we've been rapidly accepting contributions from big players in the industry, as I mentioned before. And we're looking to get them involved in many ways, one of which is we'll happily take those pull requests, and we think that's great. We're, you know, more developers means faster progress, but we also want to have them contribute to governing the project. And so one of the tasks on the steering committee is to really get serious about defining exactly who sits on the steering committee and how does it relate to our strategy as a project and get those people involved. As I said before, we don't want this to be perceived as a Google project. This is an industry project. And so, yes, we want to get all of those companies involved so that we all feel some ownership over it.
And I would add to that and say, yes, there is a steering committee and there's a technical oversight committee, but also all the different areas have their own working groups, right? So if you are, let's say, a security expert and you have very specific ideas about what you can build and how you want to build it, and you want to have in-depth discussion with the developers at Istio, a great way to get engaged would be to start attending the weekly and biweekly meetings they have. And you can do demos and you can really be part of the team that builds the next version of Istio.
Speaking of the next versions of Istio, obviously you have a roadmap. What's coming up on the roadmap and what features in that are you most excited about?
So now that 1.0, like you said, is out, we want to spend more time understanding what the features are that we currently have in alpha that did not make it to beta, that our users want in beta soon, and making that happen. We also want to spend more time in the hybrid environment. So one of the things that you saw happen in 0.8, which is the previous long-term supported release, was we have multi-cluster support, right? So that was our first foray into supporting hybrid environment. And what we would like to do going forward is expand on that. And sometime in the near future, you might be able to use Istio on-prem, Istio on GCP, or for that matter, anywhere else, and be able to pull them all into a single mesh and manage them and secure them very seamlessly. So that's something that we would be working on. We also want to invest in API management capabilities. So be it API analytics or gRPC transcoding, there are a whole host of features that people are excited to have. And that is something that we would be spending time in the future, you know, working and building them. And you are all obviously welcome to participate and contribute to it. After all, this is a open source project. So we rely on the listeners and obviously all the developers to help us build this.
I'm glad you brought up API management. That was something I was going to say. And the other thing that I personally feel strongly about is facilitating incremental adoption of Istio. One of the things that we've seen in people who have done successful implementations is start by not implementing all of the pieces and not getting all the functionality. If all you need is routing at the edge, you don't need to install Mixer, for example. And some people aren't using sidecars. Some people are. Certainly, you get fewer features if you don't. But we can actually make it easier, say, through our installation and the Helm scripts we publish, to make it easier for people to start small and phase in more components as they decide to take advantage of more of the features. So I want to see us do that work.
And if you haven't already checked out a presentation that Dan did on a la carte and how people can use Istio incrementally, I think you definitely should check it out. It is an awesome presentation.
It's better in person.
Probably.
He gesticulates a lot.
Invite me over to your company and I'll tell you all about Istio a la carte.
If you do not have the luxury of a visit from Dan Cerulli, how would you recommend a company would get involved with Istio project?
We decided to put a bunch of information on the World Wide Web.
That's a good place to have information.
We even have, I don't remember the IP address. However, we do have a domain name.
Handy.
Which URL. So istio.io is really the best place to go. It's got docs. Docs are never good enough. There's never enough. But in this case, we have really worked hard on them.
Thank you.
I promise that you will find deficiencies. PR is accepted. Of course, that's all open source. And on istio.io, you'll see a link to community. First of all, there's all kinds of getting started. Here's examples you can run through, but there's also a community page, and that has links to our Rocket Chat. It has links to the different Google groups where you can ask users questions. There's another one for if you're doing development and integrating with Istio, as well as like the dates and times of the working group sessions.
Right. And if you want to have more real-time discussion with some of the developers, you're welcome to participate in the Slack channel. Granted, it is a full-time job, but if you're open to it, you're welcome.
Are the Rocket Chat and the Slack the same thing?
The Rocket Chat is for anyone who's thinking about Istio, using Istio, and the Slack is used for people who are developing on Istio. Rocket Chat is open to anybody.
And also talking about istio.io, one of the cool section that we will have under documentation is Operator's Guide. So this is equivalent to SRE Playbook, right? So if you try Istio, you have some questions, you want to troubleshoot it, you want to know how to go about doing that, this would be a great place to start. And it'll be part of the 1.0 release.
Jasmine, Dan, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
It was our pleasure.
Thank you for having us over. This was fun.
You can find the IP for istio.io and other links to Dan and Jasmine's Twitter pages on our show notes at kubernetespodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. As always, if you enjoyed this show, please help us spread the word and tell a friend. If you have any feedback for us, you can find us on Twitter at kubernetespod or reach us by email, kubernetespodcast@google.com.
You can also check out our website at kubernetespodcast.com, where you'll find our handcrafted artisanal show notes. Until next time, take care.
Catch you next week.